This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen in by phone calling 716-748-0144. Or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to station 2, and click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests. Toll-free USA and Canada, 888-429-5471. Joining me tonight are Mark Klein and Ben Bloom. Mark is a former technician at AT&T who blew the whistle on AT&T that they were data mining and sending it to the government. And also joining us is Ben Bloom. And Ben is a filmmaker at the age of 13, I believe it is, and he had a film that won an award. He came in second on the Filmmakers Award with C-SPAN. And his featured host or guest on that, sorry about that, his featured guest was Mark Klein. Welcome, gentlemen. And Mark, let's start with you.
Okay.
What was it like when you first found out that the data was being shipped somewhere else?
Well, that was a pretty scary time. I first found out in 2002, right after the spying program started, because nobody knew about it outside of a few officials in the government. But I happened to be working at AT&T, and we were told an NSA guy was coming to our office for something, and gradually we found out they were installing a secret room at a building nearby, which I was transferred to the following year in 2003. So, and then I gathered some engineering documents. I figured out what they were doing. They were basically copying the entire internet data stream in a blind copy, which I knew right away was totally violated the Fourth Amendment, because the Fourth Amendment requires specific warrants stating probable cause, right? But they were doing a blind copy, copying millions of people's data, communications, email, and whatever else you do on the internet. And I also learned at that time that was not the only room. There was rooms across the country. So this was a big operation. And so I sat on it for a while. When I retired in 2004, I took the documents with me. And then when the New York Times came out with an expose in late 2005 that there was this warrantless wiretapping going on, I decided to bring my documents out into the public domain. And that was what happened in 2006.
Okay. Didn't you fear that somebody would find out that you had the documents? And you know, we know how easily the government can make people disappear.
Well, I was scared, but I should point out the documents I'm talking about are not secret documents stamped NSA. They were not classified documents. They were AT&T engineering documents, which the technicians had because of the need to know how things were connected. It was part of our job. And so the documents merely showed how things were connected. One of them, there were three documents adding up to about 120 pages. One of them was a little more restricted in circulation, but these were not NSA documents. These were AT&T documents. But anyway, yeah, I was scared of what might happen.
Well, and, of course. So
that's why I didn't do anything for a while. But when I saw the New York Times expose, I thought this is something that needs to be known. So I took a chance.
Great. And you were saying that I was watching your show earlier on, or was it yesterday, on Huffington Post Live.
Right. And
the Los Angeles Times decided not to run your story.
Yeah. I did two things in January 2006. One, I brought my documents to the electronic station, and they had a lawsuit going against AT&T. So that got the legal side of it going. But then I ran into an LA Times reporter, and that was my first contact with major media. And he was interested in doing a major front page story. So I worked with him for several weeks. And then suddenly he told me there was a hang up because the top guy at the LA Times, he told me, was talking to the director of national intelligence about this article. His name was John Negroponte at the time. I also found out later that LA Times was talking to General Hayden, who was the head of the NSA. They were also talking to Senator Feinstein's office, all about this article. So when I heard a newspaper was telling these officials about it, I had the feeling right away, well, they're going to be told to shut up, and the article is going to be killed. And that's what happened. The article was killed. They didn't give me a reason at first. But the following year, when I finally got a break into major TV with ABC Nightline, I was on ABC Nightline, and I told them about this story about what happened at the LA Times, and they actually followed up, which was a remarkable thing. They called the LA Times and asked, did this happen? Did you actually kill the story? And they admitted to it. And they revealed who decided to kill the story. And it turned out it was Dean Baquet, who was the editor at the LA Times back then. Since then, he went over to the New York Times. And now you've probably heard in the news, he's been appointed the top post at the New York Times, the executive editor of the New York Times. And Glenn Greenwald commented about this, and I agreed with his comment in my Huffington Post interview, that bringing Dean Baquet, making him the executive editor of the New York Times, just will reinforce the New York Times' subservience to the government, because that's the history of this guy, Dean Baquet. The New York Times has a whole history of suppressing stories when the government tells them to. They sat on that wiretapping story for a year and a half because the government, the Bush regime, did not want it published. They were forced to publish it because their lead reporter forced their hand by putting it in a book he was putting out. So that's Dean Baquet in the New York Times.
Right.
And that's what happened at the LA Times.
Well, it seems like the mainstream media is trying to keep things, or they're complying with the government to keep things away from people. There was a lot of stories that I'm finding on YouTube that were actual news reports that were canned, especially about 9/11 and things of that nature, that it seems like they're trying to suppress free speech, and there is no more investigational journalism like was supposed to be, and the media was supposed to be the watchdog over our government. And it doesn't seem like they're doing their job. It looks like they're covering up for the government.
Yeah, well, my experience gave me a feel for what how these things work. If you have something that the government doesn't want published, there's various ways they can deal with that. But one way is they talk to the media that you're talking to and twist their arms in one way or another, scare them or just whisper in their ear that this would be against national security to publish. And very often, the major media will go along with that. Another suspicious experience I had was the first, I got approached once I got a story out in the New York Times, because the LA Times killed my story. I went to the New York Times and they published a small article, which was useful because it was my first break in major media. And they talked about the documents I had. So then I was approached by a lot of TV interview type shows that wanted to be the first to interview me on national TV. So we agreed to do that with 60 Minutes. They were hot to do this story. So in September 2006, 60 Minutes paid to fly me to New York, and I was interviewed by Steve Croft. I'm sure you've seen him on 60 Minutes. And we had a good interview, and they had it all ready to go. And then we waited and waited and waited and waited. And every week they'd say, well, no, not this week, maybe next week. No, it's been postponed, and we'll have it soon. And in the end, 60 Minutes never aired that interview. And I think it never gave us a reason. I think it was a good interview. I think they got leaned on by the government. So it was only in early the following year, 2007, when we finally got a break on national TV with ABC Nightline and also PBS Frontline with Hedrick Smith, who did a good job. So that's how we got on national TV.
Oh, well, that's good. You know, I was watching an interview with Hayden, and he says that they use metadata to kill, you know, plain out and simple. So the thing is, the scary part is that could be me, you, that could be anybody that even attempts to speak out about anything or the corruption that the government is going through. So they can use any of that metadata on us, on American civilians. And that's the scary part. Let's switch over to the young filmmaker, Ben. How did you come across Mark and decide to do an interview with him?
Yeah, so I was researching my government surveillance topic, and I came across Mark Klein while I was researching, looking for sources to use for writing my script. So I noticed he was in the San Francisco Bay Area, which I live also. So I shot him an email and we just arranged it. Like that.
Very good. Very good. And what motivated you? I know you heard about the PRISM, and was it the Snowden deal, or was it deals prior to that that you had known about?
No, the main reason I wanted to make a video on government surveillance is because just the reason it's unconstitutional. And I think United States citizens should know that their data might be looked at by the NSA. And I think they should know that that's unconstitutional.
Yeah, but they seem to be doing a lot of other unconstitutional search and seizure, holding people without due attorney. Maybe that should be your next videos.
Maybe.
That's good. I'm proud of you. That's pretty good. You're getting into the limelight of the media circuit, but you're doing it in a good deed. You're doing it for honesty, and you're doing it because you care about the Constitution of the United States of America. And we here as American citizens, that should be our prior concern, no matter what our other backgrounds are.
Mm-hmm.
Good job. Mark.
Yeah.
Would you do it all over again?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
There were some things I did wrong, which I wish I could have corrected. But on the whole, I'm proud of what I did. And it certainly got the message out. That's the first thing I wanted to do, was make people aware. And that succeeded beyond my wildest dreams. What happens next is a knottier problem. And that's the problem of Congress and how the parties are tied into this. And I don't think they want to do anything to change the situation. But that's another problem. But people are much more aware now. And certainly Edward Snowden has heightened awareness.
Well, there was a lot of crimes committed against the Constitution by the Bush administration. And it doesn't seem like the people are not lighting a flame under the bums of the people that we are putting into office to represent us. It seems like they're not listening to the people, but yet they're doing whatever they want to do. Is it a runaway government in your perception?
You're asking me? Yes. The problem, the knotty political problem we face, is that the two parties are completely immune from the sentiment of ordinary working people. They mainly, or now I would say only, answer to the narrow military and corporate interests that pay their way. And so the two parties are basically insulated from ordinary people, and they don't listen to us because they know they're firmly in power and there's no obvious way to get them out of power. While the two parties argue with each other and throw spitballs at each other over stuff like, you know, Social Security or medical care and that and so forth and so on. And there's some small differences there. On the main issues of our time, both parties still vote for every war effort, all the NSA spying. Both parties are for killing people with drones. There's no serious opposition in Congress to any of this stuff. And that's the problem we face. And you can compare what's happening today, where there's virtually no opposition in Congress to what the government does on this score, compared with back in the 70s, when the NSA's transgressions were revealed. It was actually an investigation. Nixon was forced to resign. Some of Nixon's henchmen actually went to jail. They were prosecuted, including Nixon's attorney general. And then they passed a law trying to restrict domestic spying. That was the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. So there was some motion in Congress to crack down and restrain things, for what it's worth. Today, there's nothing. It's shocking, the difference. Some of it has to do with the fact that there's no one marching in the streets anymore. Back in the 70s, there were hundreds of thousands of angry people marching against the war, you know, protesting the war, marching for civil rights and all that kind of stuff. And angry people in the streets sort of gets Congress a little more in motion, you might say, than today. People have been sort of demobilized, and there's not much protest happening. It doesn't mean that people are happy and satisfied, but it's just that people don't see a way to make their voice heard. So Congress is basically ignoring us.
Well, the main reason that Congress is or the government, the industrial military complex, is spying on the people is because we do have a runaway government, and they fear the people now. So this is, they try to put it under national security, saying, well, we have terrorists, sleeper cells and stuff like that. My feeling is that they are committing the terrorist acts just to put these laws in place. tyrannistically?
Well, I think this terrorist stuff is a huge just cover story. It's been documented over and over that none of the stuff they're doing has enabled them to catch any terrorist plots. Nobody talks about the Boston bombing, for instance. They didn't stop that, even though they knew the main suspects were, they had been tipped off about those two suspects, the Tsarnaev brothers. They were tipped off by Russian intelligence, and the FBI interrogated them, and then they went ahead and set up the bombing anyway. How come they didn't catch that?
I've seen something a little bit different. My theory on that is a little bit different there. I've seen people walking around with Blackwater skull caps on.
I saw those videos. I think what the best leading theory about the Boston event is that they were, the FBI in particular, was trying to groom the Tsarnaev brothers to be agents in Chechnya to fight against the Russian government. Because the FBI and the CIA do that all the time, trying to recruit foreign agents to fight governments that the U.S. doesn't like. And so they seem to have sort of protected the Tsarnaev brothers from any restrictions. For instance, they were able to fly back and forth from Chechnya back to the U.S. even after the U.S. knew who they were and what their political leanings were. They seem to have protection from the U.S. government. So anyway, I think the leading theory is that they were protected because the FBI was trying to groom them to be agents. And that suspicious circumstance where that other guy, Togachev, who was a friend of the Tsarnaev brothers, the FBI recently went to interview him and shot him on the spot, shot him dead, which is a highly suspicious event. I think that was part of their cover-up of the whole, circumstance.
Right. Well, it seems like a lot of these events that are happening, whether domestic terrorist acts like Sandy Hook, there's something suspicious about each and every single plot that seems to be coming up, whether there's photos surfacing of one of the girls that said she was dead, and then there's a photo of her next to Obama. Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder: are people just stupid to the fact that Sandy Hook shooting happened right in the center of the weapons industry? Small arms industry in New Haven, Connecticut, in that area. It's weird how people just don't see what's going on. I think that it was an attack on the Second Amendment, and it was an attempt to restrict guns in that city and also across the U.S.
I'm not so convinced of that. I mean, not every incident is a conspiracy. And there's been a whole string of incidents in this country where some youth or adult goes berserk through one pressure or another and just shoots people up.
Oh, no. I understand that point.
There's a certain psychosis in this country, and one can go into deep analysis about it. So I wouldn't say that every shooting is a conspiracy.
Right.
It's simply a sickness, but anyway.
Yeah, on that one, it wasn't that it was the conspiracy. It was the actions of the governor as he was speaking that got my attention. Uh-huh. It's because the governor said that we were spoken to and told that something like this might play out in our area. I mean, they're pretty much telling us right to our face, and people don't pay attention to what's being said to them. I think that's the problem with what's going on. Things are intentionally done. They're put right there in our faces so we can see what's going on. The purpose that they're showing us what's going on so we can pick up on it is, I think, that they're trying to rub it in our face that, well, we're going to do whatever we want and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, I wouldn't want to overgeneralize. Certainly some of them think that way, but there's lots of government officials with different agendas that often clash with each other. But the unifying agenda is they want to keep the American people down. I really think that's what this whole spying apparatus is. Governments, particularly governments that represent super rich, a narrow layer of super rich people, such a government does not trust the population because the population feels the government is not doing anything for us. They're afraid that people might rise up, frankly. And so governments like this want to be able to track everybody. And the scary thing is now with the new spying equipment they have tied into the internet, they actually have an apparatus to track everybody, something they something that can only be conceived of in science fiction 25 or 30 years ago. But now present technology makes this possible, and that's a scary new thing.
All right, which pretty much is prophesized in the sense, you know, they talk about the web in the sky and everything else, and this seems to be it, to where they can, you know, see in on us. My thing is, it's tough times that we're going through right now. I think we're in a time of an area to where the government is just out to take control. And you know that when governments are not working for the people, they tend to be afraid of the people, as you stated. So right. This is the need for them to spy, I'm guessing. I believe Hitler was doing the same thing prior to Nazi Germany. They were spying in on the people. They disarmed, they starved, and then they took over. And it seems to be the same scenario going on here in the United States. What's your perception on it?
Well, as I just explained, yeah, the government, particularly governments like this that represent the super rich, such governments are afraid of the people, and that's why they feel they have to know everything about what everybody is doing. And this new technology enables them to collect such information on a scale that they couldn't dream of before. And that's right. That's what they're doing. They're collecting information on billions of people every day.
Do you have a website that you can plug in, both Mark and Ben? If you guys have websites, feel free to plug them in before we go to break. You can start with yours, Mark.
What do you mean by plug in?
You can announce your website to where people can learn more about what you did.
All right. I have a little primitive website, you might say, that talks about my book and gives links to a number of interviews I've done. My book is called Wiring Up the Big Brother Machine, and you can find that on Amazon.com. I have a little website on Google. It's at sites.google.com/site/markkline2009/home. Awesome. And if you go to that site, you'll find a blurb about my book, and then you'll find links to a bunch of interviews I've done. I should point out also, I recently did an interview with Frontline. The second part is on tonight, and it's on at 10 p.m. on PBS. That's usually Channel 9. I don't know. It depends on your area.
Oh, you're in the Bay Area.
I'm on this part. This part will cover the AT&T story. So you might want to tune that in tonight.
Okay, great. And Ben, your site?
Yeah, you can either go to my website directly. It is intvids5.com, intvids5.com. Or you could just search on YouTube. You can search Ben Blum, and I'm the first one that comes up.
Great. Great. We'll be right back with questions for Mark and Ben here on the BBS Radio Network with the People Speak. I'm Rock Cash. We'll be right back after a short break.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please. Give to the world for the program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
This is Rock Cash. We're back on the BBS Radio Network, The People Speak. Mark Klein and Ben Blum, my guests. Mark, can you go over once again the surveillance techniques that they were using that we were talking about on break?
All right. First, they have these splitters that basically copy the entire internet stream, blind copy. There's no selection going on. That is completely illegal. Then they send that data to their secret rooms, and the secret rooms has what they call a NARUS is a company, NARUS, Semantic Traffic Analyzer. Well, this is the piece of equipment used by AT&T. Verizon uses something else that does the same thing. And the Semantic Traffic Analyzer can look at the content of the data packets going across and select out whatever they program it to select out. It could be all the email from San Francisco. It could be only Mark Klein's email. It could be anybody who mentions the the word National Security Agency, whatever. It's programmable. And they collect all that according to whatever parameter they set out, and they send it back for storage. They have huge data warehouses now that can collect virtually infinite amounts of data. So what they've got basically is a data warehouse on everybody, not just Americans, but as Snowden has revealed, they're collecting everybody in the world by tapping into transatlantic fiber cables. So they have a library, a dossier, if you might say, on everybody. And so if they call before Congress, they'll say, no, we're not surveilling the average person. And then you got to get into the nitty-gritty of how they use words. They don't consider it surveillance if they don't call up your name to read your email or listen to your phone call. But they're actually still collecting your data and storing it in a warehouse. So they evade, you know, the law, the letter of the law, through these little word games. But if they want to go after you, if they decide that you were in a dangerous demonstration, Occupy Wall Street, say, or something they don't like, then they gather your name, because as soon as you show up at a demonstration, by the way, their equipment can scan and collect whatever cell phones are in the area. And they'll know virtually anybody who's got a cell phone in the area, they'll get your name. So they'll know virtually instantly who's at that demonstration. They can look at that, look up your name, collect. And as Snowden revealed something in much more detail, because he had something I did not. Snowden had actual NSA internal slides and documents that revealed their capabilities in much greater detail. And he revealed through their X key score program, for instance, that any NSA agent has a little X key score on their desktop, and they can enter in there anybody's name, enter in their email, and collect anybody's email or phone calls just by pulling down a scroll list and entering a reason, whatever reason, doesn't matter, and collect whoever they want and go after individual people, because it's all been stored already, you see. It's all there. They just have to call it up with X key score program or other programs that they got. So if they want to go after you, that little library of information they got is there for their handiwork.
Okay. Does that also track the GPS of your whereabouts and everything else? Capability there?
They have various programs to collect from various places. One of them is email. And then, of course, they have to go to the various companies. Snowden revealed they go to Google and Yahoo and Microsoft and so forth to collect email. Then for cell phones, they had to go to cell phone companies and collect all that. And there's evidence here that they can collect your GPS location off your cell phone and collect that too. Then there's a whole bunch of other places. And Glenn Greenwald, he showed an NSA slide just recently in his book. He made a point of it in a recent interview, that the NSA said in their slide, and this is their internal documents, they don't talk about this in public, that basically their slogan is collect it all, know it all, process it all, so that anywhere they can get hold of electronic information about you, they will collect it and store it. So that includes your email, your cell phone, your financial transactions from credit cards, whatever. They collect it all and index it.
Well, Mike in California wants to know, Mark, does Mark attend some? He wants to know what school you attend, Mark. I don't think this question is for you. I think this question is for Ben. I think Mike made a mistake on the names. Ben, Mike in California wants to know, what school do you go to? Because you seem to be very advanced.
I attend St. Mark's School in San Rafael, California.
Oh, awesome. And what do you think about all of this? Give us your perception on the entire situation, Ben.
Well, I just think that in order to fight the NSA and sort of slow down the process or stop the process of collecting data, I think we need to make it clear to the people of the United States that this is happening. And I just think we need to make it, I think we need to empower the people of the United States. So that was one of the reasons I made a video on this also. but if enough people want change, the government has to do something. That's what I think, at least.
And what is your ideal of a good government?
I think the government must be transparent. Transparency is key, in my opinion, and they must also, in regards to the NSA spying, I think the FISA court should be changed. So you actually, when people want to search people up in the NSA, I think they should actually have to have a reason. So the FISA court isn't doing a very good job of granting search warrants for individual searches. So I think the U.S. government has to address that issue also.
Right. You know what my ideal perception of a government should be? I think that every single year the government should be changed out. There should be no career politicians. Because when you're in there for a long time, it's easier to get pulled into the corruption. And I believe that there should be a civilian voluntary oversight committee that has the power to oversee everything that the government is doing in order not to have the government be taken away from us, because this is a republic. It was never a democracy. It was never intended to be a democracy. It was always to be a republic. It was always to work for the people. It seems to be working for capitalists and just capitalists because they've taken over the country. So I love your work. I love your work on your YouTube channel. You're doing great. You're heading in the right direction. Keep it up. Be strong. And don't be afraid to speak out, because that's what America is all about. And it's all about us speaking out.
Thank you.
Good job. Ellen in Ohio has a question for Mark. During your employment, he stated that he waited till he left AT&T before he blew the whistle. But have you been harassed at all or any threats?
No. not directly. I was in a fortunate position, which encouraged me to come forward. I did not work for the government, so I never signed any security oaths promising to keep quiet. So they couldn't prosecute me for breaking my security oath, which is a problem that NSA people face, right? That's why Ed Snowden fled the country, because he wanted to be able to speak out before they threw him in jail. But no, the only threat I faced when I came out in 2006 was from AT&T, because I took with me company engineering documents. They were threatening to sue me for that. And if they did sue me, and if I lost the suit, they could have, taken my house and taken my bank accounts and really damaged my retirement account, right? But as it turned out, they did not sue me. And I think the reason has become obvious that they had already too much bad publicity. And it would have looked real bad for them if they sued a known whistleblower. So they didn't do it.
They would have sued, and then they would have lost the countersuit.
That's right. That was the other part of it. If they sued me, we could have countersued and demanded more witnesses and documents. And that would have opened them up further. And they certainly did not want that. So that restrained them.
Well, I kind of wish they would have sued. That's the thing. I'm a little bit defiant of our local government here, and I'm pushing them to the edge for certain things because they're not living up to their part as far as keeping the corporations quiet and things like that. And the only way to get at them is to, you know, stuff it in their face. They gave me a ticket for not licensing my dog, which I didn't license intentionally. Just to prove the point, when they came to, you know, give me a ticket, well, I'm like, okay, I'm not paying this. Until you start following your rules for Walmart, as you are for the civilians on this end, then, you know, they're your laws. You're supposed to follow them equally. There is, I believe that's pretty much taxpayer discrimination when they're going against civilians, but they're not willing to go against the corporations.
Yeah, so, I think it's, yeah.
Go ahead.
It's become obvious recently. I think Glenn Greenwald has remarked about this, a number of other people, that particularly in the last 10 years, the richest people and the well-connected government officials have basically exempted themselves from the law, that they are immune from the law. They can't be prosecuted. So like the banks, no banker of any importance got prosecuted for the bank collapse, which the banks are responsible for. Nobody's been prosecuted for the NSA transgressions.
Well, I think the bankers should all be put in jail because they're defrauding the American public. They're charging us interest on our own tax dollars. They're robbing us blind. That's why there's inflation.
There was tremendous fraud that happened. Some of it is quite obvious, particularly Goldman Sachs and Jamie Dimon. But they've been protected so that none of them have been prosecuted.
Well, that's crazy. Got another question for you, Mark. Do you feel that Snowden is a hero, and if he doesn't make Obama and our government villain? Oh, if he's a hero, does it make Obama and our government villains? Is what he wants to know.
Well, of course, Snowden's a hero. He stuck his neck out far more than I did. He risked his whole life. And he's a young guy. He had a whole life ahead of him, a comfortable, well-paid life. He was living in Hawaii. He threw all that away to bring this information to the American public because he obviously believed in the principles of democratic principles that we all get taught in high school. And so he's a hero. I don't think there's any dispute about that. Well, there's a dispute if you ask the average senator, like Dianne Feinstein, considers him a traitor. And she's the leading Democrat on the Intelligence Committee. That tells you where the Democratic Party's at. And the same from the Republicans, of course. So
yeah, Feinstein, Feinstein seems to be a big sellout to the American people, along with Pelosi and Boxer, and they seem to all be just selling us out as if we're nothing. They don't adhere to us whatsoever.
That's the problem I pointed out earlier. They don't listen to us because they don't have to. They listen to their rich constituency and also the military-industrial complex, which wants to continue their endless war. So that's where we're at this point. That's the biggest problem of our time right now, is we face an immovable Congress run by two parties that are unanswerable to the American people.
We're facing tyranny.
Yeah, in a sense, yes.
One last question for you. Carol in Tennessee wants to know, Ben, do you admire Oliver Stone or Michael Moore, or who are your heroes?
Well, my heroes are the whistleblowers. So Mark Klein, you're one of my heroes. but yeah, most of my heroes are whistleblowers. Edward Snowden, we were just talking about that. But yeah, not too many filmmaking heroes.
Great. Well, you know what? I've got your Skype. I'm going to send you suggestions of dozens of whistleblowers that we've interviewed on our show, and maybe you can further your video career with them. We're running out of time. Anything you guys want to add, Ben or Mark?
I just want to say about Ben. Ben, I was very impressed that such a young person had such a very strong social conscience combined with a talent of video. And that's why I agreed to do a video for him. And I just wish a lot of other young people would develop such a social conscience.
Thank you.
Oh, I agree. And I completely concur. His advancement, and the only thing that I can tell you, to help you out in life, is always be an independent thinker. Always think outside the box, because when you're systemized, you can only think inside the box. And the best way to be unsystemized is to think outside the box and always think for yourself. You can't follow the norm, and don't be afraid to not follow the norm, because that's the only way that you're going to be able to see what's really going on. It was a pleasure having you on, Ben.
Thanks for having me.
Great. And it was also a pleasure having you on, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Hopefully, if anything stirs up in this sense again, we'll have you guys back on. Ben, if you make any more videos that are topping the charts, we'll definitely have you back on.
All right. Thank you.
All right. This is Rockash signing out on The People Speak. Don't forget to join us next week. I believe we have some kind of yoga instructor that is being interviewed by one of our other hosts. Anyways, this is Rockash. See you in a couple of weeks. Have a good weekend, and we're signing off from here.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.